With Kate Dale.
They have joined us for the discussion, and we thank you very much, and we look forward to getting to know you better.
We
do not yet have a quorum, so I'll just move into just a bit of an introduction for audience members, and by the way, this meeting is being televised today, as summary of what we did this summer. Remembering a bit about the thousands of miles that this committee logged starting in July, finishing up just 2 weeks ago in the metro area on a very cold day. We toured infrastructure needs across the state. We saw crumbling wastewater systems, flood-ravaged communities, overcrowded and inefficient state college and university buildings, under-maintained state facilities, and many other projects that could greatly affect the future public safety, quality of life, and economic development in regions of the state. We saw firsthand how strategic bonding could serve the public interest and create economic benefits, and the tours provided a context, a broader context, for crafting a balanced and strategic bonding bill that includes important long-term investments in higher education, the environment, transportation, and projects that will stimulate the economy. When combining all the site visits and presentations and hearings, we believe the committee has been briefed on well over 300 bonding projects to date. Our crack committee staff even totaled up miles. I understand we logged just in greater Minnesota about 4,000 miles, and that did not include 6 days of metropolitan and suburban tours. And we have a special guest today. Sheldon D. joined us and his wife, and
right.
you're seeing that he, we're going to ask him to come forward. He has, since we have seen him, has had knee replacement, so he's moving just a little bit differently than when we first saw him, members, we have the following certificate of commendation for Sheldon G. Whereas Sheldon G. safely and swiftly transported the House Capital Investment Committee on bonding tours in Northwest, Northeast, Southwest, and Central Minnesota. I'm told you didn't join us yet in Southeast. Whereas Sheldon G. used his 30 years of experience as a deputy sheriff to keep the House Capital Investment Committee in line and on time. And whereas Sheldon G. did not lose his sense of humor when it was raining in the bus and traffic was heavy. And whereas Sheldon G. was not fond of a certain bike rack at the Sibley State Park. And whereas Sheldon G. logged many miles in rapid fashion in order to keep the House Capital Investment Committee on schedule, asked Matt Dean and Tom Ravina. And whereas Sheldon G. is married to Ma, who's here today, we've heard about her. She doesn't look like Ma, do you think? Raised three children of his own and is an adoring grandfather in southeastern Minnesota, and therefore be it resolved by the House Capital Investment Committee that Sheldon G. is commended for his outstanding service to the House of Representatives in the state of Minnesota.
I've never been involved with politics in any way, shape, or form, but I did learn one thing. I can't believe how hard these people work and how much effort they put into it. You're all to be commended. And thank you for everything.
Thank you.
We have a quorum, and Representative Junkie, I know you have been regular and would move the March minutes of March 20,
yep.
December 5, and
I
December
11. I move those minutes.
Any discussion about those minutes? Correct me.
Madam Chair, I did have one correction that Hanson is E-N rather than O-N. And so on each of the 3 minutes, it's S-O-N, and it needs to be S-E-N.
We will, and with those corrections, minutes are approved as corrected. And I don't know if our ranking minority member, Representative Singlestead, brought all of her tablets so that you could see her prolific notes, but she never stopped writing, and I think you have at least 6 or 7 tablets filled with notes. But we did ask her just to transition into the governor's presentation for just a feeling for what was it she was writing on those pages.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it was about 5 notebooks. I think it was a couple hundred pages. And oftentimes people ask me what I'm writing about. Well, my background's in journalism, so I say I can't think unless I have a pen in my hand. But what is nice is that I'm able to pick up some fun quotes that maybe we only hear when we're on the bonding committee. So I think the pages have distributed the one sheet here, and of the hundreds of quotes that we heard during our 21 days of site visits, I picked out the top 10, which I categorize as the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I won't read all of them, but maybe just highlights from one of each of the sections. The good, you know, we saw all over Minnesota, just so impressed with our geography and landscape and how beautiful our state is. When we were in Uppsala, the mayor welcomed us by saying, "Welcome to Uppsala, where you can almost hear the noon whistle from Lake Wobegon." And it was a nice small town there we visited. Of course, we saw a lot of bad things that needed funding around the state. And I won't talk about number 7 there. That was from Representative Peterson. But number 4 there, we have nightmares at night about boiler failures. That's what keeps the campus president awake at night on one of our many Minscu stops along the way.
And we actually have some Minscu presidents in the audience. Whether they would agree with that, or we have nightmares at night about boiler failures, that's what keeps presidents awake at night.
And then under the ugly, number 8, wastewater treatment plants were built with a 20-year lifespan. We're now on our 40th year, and we're out of Band-Aids, duct tape, and bungee cords and trying to keep up with the repairs. That one was in Medford, but we saw many of them around the state. So, Madam Chair, I thought this was a good way to kind of start out where we've been over the last several months.
Thank you very much, Representative Singleton. We have the governor's office here today to start us off this year with a presentation of the governor's bonding recommendations. And is it Commissioner Hansen? Are you, you have some introductions to make, I believe, to start us off. And members, I would suggest that we just simply ask questions as we go along. And the one question we have is, will there be a bill, Commissioner Hansen?
We've spoken to you about that, Madam Chair.
Pardon me?
Could you ask a question?
Yes, if there will be a bill.
You got a bill?
Yes.
Yes, Madam Chair. You should have the jackets. If you haven't received them already, when I get back from here, I will check. I think.
Welcome to the committee, and my understanding is you have an introduction to make.
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Tom Hansen, Commissioner of Finance, and with me in the presentation is Jim Showalter, our State Budget Director. But before I get into talking about the governor's bonding request, I want to just for a moment introduce our new, I guess the best way to put it is our new Peter Towson. For those that have been working on capital investment around the Capitol for the last 2 decades or so, Peter is a fixture. He officially retired from state service last April, and then we signed him on a one-year contract and for part-time, and he's currently on a beach in Tampa Bay. So we have in the last, we spent a great deal of time in looking for his replacement. We consulted past commissioners of both parties as well as public finance professionals, and we selected, after much consideration, Kathy Cardell, who is sitting behind me in the red. Kathy has over 20 years of experience in public finance, consulting with other states and similar issues that we face here as well as local units of government. Her resume reads like a who's who of the major public finance firms in Minnesota, and she has worked with many of the issues that we're going to be working on. So I just wanted to introduce you to her. She will be around meeting all of you in the time to come. And with that, I will start our presentation.
Welcome. And I think we have a copy of the
Yes, we have provided a copy of the slides And for those that want to look up at the screens, we have those. We have it by laptop as well. On the first slide, you see that the our GO bonding recommendation, the $965 million, which meets the 3%. The total recommendation is $1,088,000. It's the largest capital bonding recommendation by governor, and still we had to say no to about two-thirds of the dollars requested. On the next slide, I'll turn it over to Jim Sowell.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Sowell, the State Budget Director at the Department of Finance. For the next few slides, I'm just going to give you a brief overview of the budget, capital budget process, some of the requests on the table, and some of the overview information. Then we're going to return back to the more specific recommendations that are in the governor's package. Certainly, as you are all well aware, due to your visits and calls and visits, that there are quite a number of capital budget challenges this year. That's not unusual. I think that the size of the challenges is perhaps a little bit larger than usual. We have about $3.4 billion in capital budget requests, about 2.2 of that from state agencies, the remainder from local government. That figure, that total request number, is about 60% larger than what we've seen in the prior capital budget year. Much of that is due to a growth in both segments, about 37% growth in state agency requests, about a doubling of local requests that are before you this year. Behind those factors include aging infrastructure and as well as the demand for new investments. As usual, the 3% guideline is one of the several factors that we use to determine the available bonding recommendations or available bonding limits. The governor's recommendation stayed within that 3% limit. Specifically on the governor's capital budget recommendations, several different themes you're going to see throughout it, focusing on improving the state's infrastructure, trying to prioritize within that long list of competing interests and needs to find those that seem to be more urgent. Focusing on traditional assets. As the Department of Finance has come before this committee through the years, we've repeatedly talked about trying to make sure that the state's assets are maintained even as before you start looking at new projects. That means asset preservation, that means a replacement of aged buildings. In addition, the budget makes recommendations to try and build capacity for long-term growth. There are some economic development ideas in this package that try to make sure that we have not only economic opportunity today, but going into the future. The statewide distribution we'll look at in a second, but you'll see that there's a pretty broad distribution of those capital recommendations. And then there's, of course, some one-time opportunities that the governor is responding to in his capital budget recommendations. The process for capital budget is different than the operating budget, and I want to just pause on that for a moment. Capital budget requests are received in the early summer months, at which time we compile them and give all of those requests to the Capital Investment Committee so that you have an opportunity to go and examine those projects. For the most part, we got, we certainly had all the state agency requests, or nearly all of them at that time frame, many of the local requests as well, and that gives us all an opportunity to make sure that those projects are ready to go. So long as there's a substantial oversubscription, certainly more requests than there are dollars, this will allow us to have some time for analysis to make sure that any projects that we do and do fund are ready to go, that the design work, programmatic aspects are well thought through. Part of the capital budget reforms that the legislature and the Department of Finance and the executive branch generally worked together more than about 20 years ago now, and that's still the process we're following today. Within the Department of Finance, we also did site visits. Our executive budget officers did detailed reviews of the project, to complete technical assessments of those project plans, working with the Department of Administration as well. And finally, working with the governor and the governor's office to make sure that we address the agency priorities as well as administration priorities.
Madam Chair, any questions, sir?
As we go, Representative Duncan.
How many site visits did you have?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have a tally. I'm sure you visited more sites than we did, but we can attest.
But many places I was, they said Commissioner Hansen was here last week. So
we think there were many.
We
were usually there first. We stayed away from Wilmer.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Continue.
On the next slide, just a quick summary view of how the governor's recommendations are distributed. On that slide, you'll see that about 27% of the governor's recommendations are located in greater Minnesota, about $324 million in the seven-county metro area, an additional $470 million are statewide programs. One issue that you will certainly have experienced in the past and will continue to debate throughout this session is what's a local project, what's a state project, and in some respects, all of these capital projects are located in some community. What we try to do is just give you a feel for where some of these projects are located. Also, to the extent that the benefit of a particular program is to a local jurisdiction, the governor's recommendations tend to put those into programs that are competitive and need-based. So that examples of the PFA, Public Facilities Authority, where we've got an established set of criteria so that jurisdictions that are looking for waste and water treatment plants can come and basically work on a merit base to get those funds for their projects. Lastly, we're looking at how those projects are funded. In shorthand, talk about GO-funded general obligation. Actually, that's general obligation bonds supported by general fund debt service. When we present to you the forecast, we include some estimate of the expected debt service. This recommendation stands on the amount of bonds that would be included in this biennial, in this budget. So the debt service is slightly larger, but that debt service is ultimately borne by the general fund, supported by a full faith and trust promised by the state of Minnesota. There are also general obligation bonds through user financing and the Trunk Highway Fund. You see there are $78 million for the Trunk Highway Fund. An additional $16 million in cash is recommended in this package. That's not bonds. That is straight up appropriations that are included in this bill because those appropriations are so closely linked with the bonding request before you. Looking at the governor's recommendations of $1,088,000,000, that budget is actually larger than past capital budgets. But what we give here is a historic view in nominal dollar amounts for the size of capital budgets that have been passed. In 2 years ago, in 2006, all fund bonding bill was $1 billion. 3 years ago, it was $945 million by comparison. See a small mark in 2007 that relates to the flood. And with that, we're going to walk through the governor's recommendations and the priority areas in more specifics, and I'll turn it back over to Commissioner Hansen.
Commissioner Hansen.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you look at the first slide on the detailed section, our transportation recommendation, our $416 million, makes up 38% of the bill. That's a little higher percentage of the bill than we had 2 years ago. If I remember right, I think 2 years ago it was around 15%. The first item that we have, and that's on the chart, is the $225 million amount for the local bridges. The local bridge bonding program has the following elements. For eligibility, bridges must be less than an 80 rating. This means most are structurally deficient, functionally obsolete, or hydraulically deficient. A bridge or culvert must generally be more than 10 feet in size to be eligible. As far as priority, in the past, the program has been a first-come, first-serve. A larger funding level may mean that MnDOT looks to establish some more formal priority setting process. Funding is on a cost share basis. State bridge bonds only pay for the structure itself. Local governments are expected to pay for all the design work and approach roads. These costs can vary greatly as a percentage of the total depending on the span and the location of the bridge and what's being planned. bridge bonds, which pay for the bridge structure, must follow the following rules: the county state aid highways and the MSAS, the municipal state aid system, on those routes it's 50% bridge bonds and 50% CASA MSAS funding from locals or other local funds. If the local government has exhausted the CASA and MSAS funds, they can pay up to 100%. For township roads, township road funds from the state must be fully exhausted to pay for design and approach and share of the bridge structure. There are some other central funds to help with those townships that are have hardships with funds.
Mr. Hanson, is any of that change in policy that you're you're reading to us?
That's some current policy. We're not changing the policy with how the money is used. It's just the amount we're putting in.
And Representative Carlson has a question.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Hanson, you and I had a discussion the other day, and I was a bit surprised when I saw some of the press that came out identifying your numbers, the 600 bridges. And I've learned since, that was what I talked to you about, some of them are culverts. And you just referenced culverts today, and when I see $225 million for local bridges, I think the general public has a little different perception, at least I do, when I'm thinking of a bridge versus a culvert. And maybe you could explain to the committee how that breaks out, how much of that is a bridge, and what number of that 600 would represent a culvert. Not the culverts might not be needed. You and I had a discussion about that. But maybe that 225 should be identified, 225 million for local bridges and culverts. So they alert to the public to what you're talking about.
Well,
if you could break that off for me.
Representative Carlson, Madam Chair, the local bridge bonding would cover everything from the spectrum all. Now, if you're familiar, and you know, since you went to many more places than I did, you probably saw the Lowry Avenue Bridge in Minneapolis, in the northeast Minneapolis. That would qualify as a local bridge that, you know, funding would leverage federal funding all the way to a, as I mentioned earlier, a bridge or culvert that is more than 10 feet in size. Now, I don't have a list of the number, you know, overall number of bridges. I know that there's over 1,896 bridges built before 1946, and it's just as many that were built after that will shortly be in need. I don't know if there's anybody from MnDOT that can answer your question. We'll have to maybe follow up at our next meeting.
That would be fine. I think I'd be interested, maybe others would be as well, as to what we're really talking about there with that 2.5.
And Mr. Hanson, I would just add, I think we all did try to find a list like that. I have a list that's identified as the January 2008 MnDOT list of local bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm told that is... County commissioners or county engineers are asked to forward all potential projects, and they were dated anywhere from 2008 to 2013. There were well over 1,300 bridges, but when I looked at the total of the bond funds for over 1,300 bridges, it was about $198 million. So we're trying to, I think, come to grips with how that number and the quantity match.
Okay. We'll have that for we have 2 more hours on Thursday as well. If we can continue on with the transportation, one more thing on the local bridges, just to give you a sense of history, the 2004 governor's recommendation was $28 million. It was duplicated in 2005 at $28 and then $30 in 2006. For the local roads, we're proposing $30 million. It was 10 in 2004 and 2005, 10 in 2006, and now we're recommending $30 million for that. The next dollar item on the list is the Urban Partnership Agreement. It is a joint Minnesota Department of Transportation Met Council request for $55 million. It is a, we have applied as a state and received $133 million in federal funds, but that in turn requires us to put forward $55 million for various repairs along the I-35 corridor. It's everything from an extra lane on I-35 to improvements in downtown Minneapolis, kind of a transit transportation focus to move people more quickly along the I-35 corridor.
Rip, that Flossie was your question to this?
Yes, it is. It's to this area. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Hansen, can you tell me how much of the $416 million that you have there for transportation would be covered by a transportation bill had the governor signed one? Can you give me a ballpark number? If the governor had signed the bill last year or if the bill was before us this year, how much of this $416 would be covered by such a bill? I'm trying to understand which bill might be a better avenue here for funding this project.
Madam Chair, Representative, we don't have an exact figure. I think certainly there's a bit of a difference in the direction. The recommendations before you are general obligation, general funded projects, local roads and bridges for the most part with the UPA in addition. I'm not sure there were, I think there was some local roads component in last year's transportation package, but for the most part that was a trunk highway focused package. So many of these would not be there.
Madam Chair,
I'm not sure about the UPA.
I apologize about the phone. Madam Chair, I apologize about the phone, but Commissioner, my question is, I'm not asking about general obligation versus other bonds. I'm asking that if there was a transportation bill passed, how much of the 416 could have been covered, not through general obligation bonds, but through such a transportation bill? How many of the bridges, for instance, could have been repaired under a transportation bill, or how many of the local roads? I'm not on transportation, and I'm curious, and we may have a transportation bill this session, so my curiosity is just piqued. Which bill would be the better venue, and how much of the 416 could be covered in the transportation?
Representative Pawlowski, Madam Chair, as well, I'll just answer. I'll go down the list.
All right.
The local bridges and local roads is general obligation bonding and can't be bonded out of the trunk highway fund. So I would venture to guess that that wouldn't have been in there. The $55 million for the UPA, those are the type of items that could have been covered. Their transit repairs, you might have been able to squeeze some of that in. I can't remember off the top of my head when the UPA was signed or whether we even had it in place. I don't think we did at that point. The $70 million to advance the Central Corridor is, again, a general obligation bonding expense, and presume that that would have, they weren't ready with last year. I think they had, if I remember right, a $30 million appropriate, and it was in the bonding bill. The $35 million in investment in regional highways, which I haven't gotten to yet, is the same, some of the same MnDOT trunk highway projects that we've all seen for the last few years, the Mankato headquarters, the Chaska truck stop, and pre-design for the Maple Grove and Rochester truck stops, and that might have, sometimes in a Representative Pawlowski, in a transportation year, we carry some of that trunk highway bonding, and I can't remember. I don't know if that was in the House and Senate's bill. And then the $2 million for buying 800 additional acres around the St. Cloud Airport probably wouldn't have been in the transportation bill last year.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner, roughly, if I say $150 million, is that a workable number?
I wasn't adding as I talked, but it's the year of the future.
I'm not math. I'm social studies. Madam Chair, I'm not going to put the commissioner on a spot here on this, but I think it would be a good idea to have a breakout at a future meeting of how much could be covered in a transportation bill and how much can be covered in a capital investment. This is because those are probably the two biggest bills we'll have in this short session. And I'm undoubtedly not be the only member who would be curious to see which is the best
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up on Representative Plowski's question. My constituents are, even though they don't have the Hastings Bridge in the district, they use it. Even though they don't have the Lafayette Bridge, they use it. These are both bridges over the Mississippi River. Does your bill, as written here, or your recommendations, fund the rebuilding of the Hastings Bridge or the Lafayette Bridge? Commissioner?
Representative Lagunias, Madam Chair, that is a trunk highway bridge and would not qualify for the local bridge money or local road money that's in the bill.
Representative Lagunias.
So, even though you are asking for appropriation for bridges, you are not addressing the bridges that I feel my constituents are the most worried about, and that's the big bridges that are over the Mississippi River.
Am
I correct? Oh, I'm sorry. She asked the question at the end. I almost spoke over it.
Madam Chair, Representative Lagunias, what we're presenting today is the capital investment bill that includes local roads and local bridges. We don't have a proposal at this time for the trunk highway bridge over the in Hastings. I think the governor has said that we are awaiting action, the legislature put forward a plan today on transportation that is going to be fast tracked through the legislature, and we'll see what happens with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as we're on transportation, I'm trying to understand the interactions between this bill and transportation bill. Maybe Representative Leader, you can help out with this, because I know you're the Commissioner of Finance on transportation, and I appreciate that. But
thank you.
A lot of the 225 for local bridges has to have local match dollars, I believe. Is true. Yep, they're nodding their heads. Yes. For the local match dollars, can they use the gas tax, license tab fees, the dedicated funding that they get, the 29% the counties get or the 9% the cities get? Can they use the gas tax money for their local match, or do they have to use general obligation bonds in the county or property taxes, or can they use any source?
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dunkey. They can use any of those funds to match. They actually can get federal funds, they get state bond monies, they get local monies, and they get, there's another one, they can apply it. So if they don't have it, they can transfer, but they can't use any trunk highway monies, that's correct.
They cannot?
They cannot use trunk highway monies, no. But they can use any gas tax or motor vehicle part of the 29%.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
part of their 29%.
Okay. So, and that's what we're trying to get at is, you know, by passing a transportation bill, it helps with the local match on this, too. Otherwise, they have nowhere to go for that local match dollar.
Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, the point I wanted to make, and I think it's just been made, is that there would have been in that transportation bill an enhancement in terms of funds going to local units of government for transportation needs. And with the match that is required here, without any increase in funding, they'll have to either go back to the property tax to reallocate their already stretched aid through the gas tax distribution and other transportation dollars.
I think we are ready to continue.
Ready to go into the next section?
Just a point of clarification, ma'am. Here's your answer. In fact, in
112 or and a half million dollars could have actually come from the transportation bill for the local max.
Madam Chair, Representative Lucavina, I think Representative Plowski had asked what programs, that what items listed here could have or might have qualified for the rules we typically have for a transportation bill. So I, as I, you just heard me say, I went through and looked, and I can, you know, next time a more official accounting of it. But yeah.
I don't know if Representative Leader's 4 o'clock meeting is going to be televised, but I think for anyone here who wants to follow up on this discussion, it will continue at 4 o'clock in Representative Leader's committee as he presents this year's transportation bill. I think there will be lots of connections between this discussion and that. Anything else? Okay, we're ready to go on.
The next section is the higher education portion of the bill. The total number for the University of Minnesota and MinSU is $258 million. To give you some historical perspective, the 2006 recommendation for this area was $268. The 2005 recommendation was $200, and 2004 was $166. The University of Minnesota is $129 million. We honored the $40 million of their $100 million request for system-wide asset preservation. The next thing on the list was the $48 million for the new science and teaching student services building at the bridgehead of Washington Avenue. They've had that on the list before, and now prioritize that higher this year than they had in the past. They're also going to ensure that many of you tour the site. That's not only going to be a teaching center, but they're going to have some student services and the bursar and other services there as well. The next thing on the item is the $26 million to renovate Falwell Hall. That's about in the middle of campus. The liberal arts building, one of the more historic buildings, has their liberal arts and their languages. Some of the rooms in the building had the old-fashioned air conditioners that drip condensation on the deck and were so noisy that it was fairly in need. They have $10 million for the civil engineering addition in Duluth. is much needed as well. And then the up at the University of Minnesota Morris, they want to renovate the community services building. They don't have a building that serves as an entrance for the community and for community services. What we did not, just looking at the list, what we did not fund, we wanted to, we skipped over the Bell Museum, wanting instead to focus on those, on classrooms and those type of items. And then we tried to recognize, other than that exception, the university's priority order, and then just didn't fund the final four items, the final three items. And then the other comment I want to make is the governor has been supportive of the bioscience authority. They didn't, when they came in and presented to us, didn't formally offer that as a recommendation, and we're going to come forward with in the legislature. Our only concern from our perspective at the finance department is that we have to, if you're going to authorize the authority, then you have to look ahead to and recognize the buildings, you know, for the bonding that it costs. So in our team, we have, but we, you know, we just carried informally on our sheet $39 million for a as a cost. So our concern has been how you count this to make sure that it's fair for other projects. And with that, any questions?
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I had a chance, I sat in on Representative Rosalina's committee earlier, and MinSU request, but university the same when we're dealing with paper. And when I look at your handout here, one of your first points here, early points, is aging state infrastructure demands new investment. And my question is how you arrived at $40 million for this to the system relative to the testimony that we've heard and the tours that we took relative to what was needed to protect our assets? You know, why $40 million versus $50 million or some other number or their full request? I think Representative Rucamino left, but I think they talked about a $600-some million backlog with Minsky, and I know in past testimony, your staff, the university has a huge backlog as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I think the Heber number is not a calculated number per se to say the exact percentage of that backlog. I think you'd find similar backlogs in other parts of the state budget. If you look at the homes systems, if you look at even state agency buildings and so on and so forth, there's certainly a capital iceberg that we've talked about for years. The figure here is trying to balance the demands and the possibilities of some of the new projects with the Heber within the constraints of the overall budget. Certainly, some of the projects were targeted because they would take care of some of those deferred maintenance issues. Fuller Hall in particular, the Science Teaching Center could certainly take care of some of the issues in those buildings by substantially renovating or replacing those buildings.
Very quickly, another way of phrasing my question might be then, are you covering at $40 million at the U of M, which is up to now, and at Minsky, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, all of the life and health safety issues?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't actually have an exact figure. I would expect so. But I would hesitate to give you a distinct answer until I talk with the U of M and Office of Higher Education.
I'd like to add to that, Representative Carlson. One of the challenges that I have always found with NIMSCU and the university, you look at the total number of requests they put in and the percentage that HEPRA is. If you did their, you know, everything they asked for with HEPRA and their requests, is a big chunk of the bill. And this year, the universities was 264 and Minsky was 325. Well, that doesn't leave much else for the other needs that we're going to be going through. So what we try to do is balance the, you know, the need for new classrooms and upgrades with their request for HEPRA. And, you know, if they want more HEPRA, then maybe they strategize on how to deal with first us and then you. Maybe they cut their list a little shorter and increase their HEPRA request, and in the end, they'll end up a little higher.
And I'm just trying to get your reasoning for $40 million, which is so I get a feel for what you think you were buying, you know, in terms of
we thought we were getting
protecting our current assets.
We felt that at that number in Minsky and the university that we were.
Madam Chair, could I take me back on that a little bit? You know, if I'm not mistaken, the Minsky request for HEPRA, Commissioner, was $110 million. The universities was 80, or it went up to 100 maybe? Where's Donna?
They were 100.
Went up to 100, and one time it was 80. So, you know, you hit the one system a little harder, but, you know, in there are, you know, air quality issues and actual safety issues, and the fact that there really isn't, I don't think, Commissioner, any fluff in those in either of those requests. And we asked specifically that question, Representative Carlson, at the last meeting, this previous to this one here that we were in. So, you know, it seems like that $40 million was just grabbed as a figure. And I would really appreciate hearing from the governor's office what kind of actual, you know, prioritization was done as far as it relates to safety and the health of the students that are in those facilities and the faculty.
Commissioner, Mr. Schultz.
And Madam Chair, Representative, if I may interject, we don't have specific, didn't receive any specific life safety estimates from the University of Minnesota, just for scale purposes, MINSCU. In its budget submission and included in the book, the legislature has received estimated their cost is about $2.8 million.
Follow-up, Representative Rodriguez?
No, but I would like to
have some type of rationalization for those numbers.
Madam Chair, Representative Rucavina, it was more than just grabbing. I did visit a lot of campuses from in Duluth for the U and the main campus here, as well as Morris, as well as a number of Binskew, and was shown my share of old boilers and cracked windows, like probably the same ones that you did. So we'll provide you some more information on that. But it was, from our perspective, more than just grabbing.
You know, members, we always thought our most technologically advanced member of this committee was Representative Pawlowski, and he must be having some sort of technological lapse today.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I usually don't carry this with me up here, and it's unfortunate. It will not happen again.
Representative Pawlowski has a question.
You want me to show you how to put in on silence?
Madam Chair, Representative Rucavina, if you could put you on silence.
That'll be all, will you?
Where's the mute button?
Representative Pawlowski has a question.
Madam Chair, my question deals, the governor had some specific comments regarding the Minskew list, not the Heaper list, but the Minskew bonding list. Could you repeat those comments for the committee? That might help us understand the Heaper request when we better understand the governor's comments about the Minskew list. Commissioner?
Do you remember that? I can quote it for you if you'd like.
I'm not sure which comment.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, he was critical, I believe, of the Minskew list in totality, that there were too many projects. Need I go on? I'd rather you quote the governor. I don't want to speak for the governor in this instance.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, if I can extrapolate from that, the Minskew list is $325 million. And if we were to fund their total request, that's over a third of the bill for one system alone. And then you look at the percentage that HEPRA is, so $110 million, it's a quite extensive list. And I think that I'm thinking of the set of comments you're focusing on a frustration with the prioritization that Minskew has done. I mean, the likelihood that, you know, with a 3% debt limit at 965, that we're going to get all the way down to the some of these projects at the end, that is very difficult to imagine.
Madam Chair,
that's the essence of what you
Madam Chair, that's the essence of it. I would just like to go one step further here. Then, would the governor suggest that this list by Minskew be dramatically reduced? And what would the governor's suggestion be to reduce the Minskew list? Which project should not be on the Minskew recommendation list?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative,
I know I see your list, Commissioner, so I have a pretty good idea what you want.
Well, that's our list.
That's it.
Well, that's what we recommend.
So, Madam Chair, Commissioner, given the totality of the Minskew list, you would say that these are the highest priority items for the Minnesota State College and University, in your mind?
Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, we tried to respect with the number we came up with for Minskew, their priority order, and but for one exception, we did that. We didn't hop around the list and jump down to 20 and up to 15. And
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I respect that. I'm sometimes critical of Minskew myself. So I'm trying to, between your observations and my observations, trying to help Minskew, but I'm really trying to help higher education. And I would hope in helping all of higher education, we would be able to come up with a list that would address the concerns and the needs of students and those communities and jobs in Minnesota. Because this is a time when we really do need to focus our resources. We will not have many resources this session. I assume, Commissioner, we're going to hear from you in a couple of weeks. And it will not be a very pleasant number. So I'm trying to focus resources as best we can. And if we can help Minskew improve, I'm joining you with that. I just want to make sure we're improving. I'm all for improving.
I agree. I'd love to work with you on that.
And Madam Chair, this is just a comment following up on what Representative Pawlowski said. And in all sincerity, I do think we should put more investment in higher education, both Minskew and the U of M. We have gone a number of years without funding a lot of these projects. And again, as we invest in the workforce of the future in this state, and we try and get people into better paying jobs, as we try and move out of the economic slump we appear to be in, I can't think of a better place to put money than into our college campuses, remodeling laboratories and reconfigurating classrooms and making things ready for this new generation of jobs and folks that are coming out. So I think, you know, I'm a little disappointed in the governor's priorities on higher ed, because I think we could and should do so much more on it than what was there. I just want to make that comment because I'm very sincere about that. Education has always been Minnesota's number one priority, and I don't think we should mess around with our colleges anymore. They need a lot of help.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, if you look at those, if you go back to, I don't have the list for 2006, but some of you were on the committee then, they pretty much, if you think of the Minsky list and the U list back to 2006, I think they got everything they wanted, for the most part. That the projects that are on the list now at the top are the end of the list from 2006, the pre-design. So they got everything, both systems, for the most part, got everything they wanted in 2006 in the last big bonding year. And many of those projects we're selling the bonds for now are in the process at the moment. So we have had pretty good, pretty healthy higher ed numbers through the governor's term.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've just been looking back in 2005, 2006 for our HEPA expenditures. In 2005, we were at a combined between U of M and Minsky of, it would be $81 million. And 2006, a combination of $70 million between the two, 30 and 40 and 40 and 41 roughly. So we're sort of within this, we're in the same ballpark as where we were within the last two. One of the questions that I had for the University of Minnesota was, where's the list? What if we give you $30 million? What if we give you $70 million? Where's our list? And the response that I got back was, I guess, kind of a common sense response was, we prioritize based on the number. And we've got a number of systems. For example, window replacements would be lower on the list than air quality. And light safety was obviously the first thing, the first priority of that. But I just want to put that forward. Those two numbers from 05, 06, we're in the same realm, so we're not deviating or going downward from the investment for HEPA. Having said that, I think that after the tours that we would all want to see more of an investment within that as a percentage.
And members, I will say that both systems have given us detailed breakdowns about what we would get at various levels, and we'll make sure that that we have between our committees get that information for both higher ed and capital investment people, because both systems have given us more information about that. So we'll share that. I think we are ready to go on.
Okay, Madam Chair, I didn't, you can, the slide has been up there for the last 15 minutes or so, but just briefly on Minsky, you see the priorities, and again, we pretty much, we went down their list. The only thing we, of the first cluster that we hopped over was North Hennepin Community College Business and Technology project, and primarily because it was not science related. Otherwise, we stuck to the first, like, 10 or 11 on the list. Went as far down the list as the science lab renovation. The next area on the list is the environment and outdoor section. Encompasses the PFA, PCA, Bowser, and BNR. This area of the bill is 16% of the bill, and getting to the 175 total, we add those areas, and then we also put in the, you know, for purposes of topic areas, the metropolitan parks for $6 million. The first number.
Representative Erdahl has a question. Did you want, before he goes into it? Okay. Proceed, and then whenever you're ready, we'll recognize you.
The first item on the list is the Public Finance Authority. In past years, this has been included on, I think before 2006, it was included in the deed. Now we break it out in a separate authority. The first item on the list are the 46, the main components. Number one is the matching funds for the U.S. EPA capitalization for the Clean Water Revolving Fund and the Drinking Water Revolving Fund. That's a $30 million, and that leverages federal money. The wastewater WIF, the Wastewater Infrastructure Fund, is $10 million. There is a small community wastewater treatment for $2 million, total maximum daily grants for $2 million, and phosphorus reduction grants for $2 million, for a total to the Public Finance Authority of $46.4 million. The next item on the list is the PCA, and there are two projects in PCA. The first one is the Coles Landfill Program, and the $15 million in the program is funds the cleanup of the Washington County landfill. The 3M will also, $15 million of GO bonds, and then 3M will partner with PCA in the cleanup, and it's agreed to voluntarily provide $8 million for cleanup and TFC-related mitigation research. This is a this closed landfill program is authorized in the early 90s, and we have put about $82 million since then to clean up these closed landfills, a very important program for cleaning up our environment. The other PCA program that we are funding is the capital assistance program, which is a perennial in the bonding bill. This year, our $9.6 million recommendation funds a grant in Pope and Douglas counties for constructing solid waste resource and recovery facilities. The next item is $30 million in wetland preservation activities. That is Bowser. The $20 million of that is in the RIM Reserve Program. The proposal continues our acquisition of permanent conservation easements on Minnesota's wetlands for $20 million. We have another perennial, the local government road wetland replacement. The project will help replace wetlands lost due to local government road construction. Approximately 236 acres of wetlands will be acquired to offset losses from local road construction. That's a $4.2 million. And then a new item, the RIM Clean Energy Program. This is a pilot program. This provides funds to design and implement a pilot project for developing renewable energy sources using native plant species. And then the next item, the $84 million, that number includes the 67 for DNR, the 9 and the CAP program I just talked about under PCA, and then the $6 million for parks, which is Metro Parks under Met Council. And the DNR, the item you're probably most familiar with is the governor's proposal to acquire U.S. steel land on Lake Vermilion to build a flagship state park. Commissioner Holston from DNR is in negotiations with U.S. Steel to figure out how much we will be paying for the land. We have not put a dollar amount forward because we don't want to tip our hand in negotiating. The bill includes some of the similar items for the DNR that we have done before. One of the more successful DNR programs over the last 10 to 15 years has been the flood hazard mitigation. Has made a big impact along the Red River Valley in Minnesota and Roseau, and hopefully in the near future in southeastern Minnesota. We have that at $15 million. We have $2 million for dam repair for those publicly owned dams which need repairing, replacing. We have a new line item, groundwater monitoring wells, $1 million. The DNR wants to drill 15 well sites in and around the metro area because the existing well network is inadequate, and this will monitor the availability of groundwater and assist in water supply planning. The next item on the list is forest land conservation easements. The project provides funds to acquire large-scale conservation easements in private forest lands, mostly in northern Minnesota. That's $9 million. The next item is the, again, something that we've had in the past, the wildlife area acquisition. We have that at $10 million. Shoreline habitat acquisition at $1 million. State forest land reforestation at $3 million. Native prairie conservation and protection at $3 million. Rim critical habitat match at $3 million. Science and natural areas, SNAs at $1 million, fish hatchery improvements at $1 million, water control structures at $500, state trail rehabilitation at $3 million, water access acquisition for fishing piers at $1 million, state park rehab and development at $10 million, drill core library addition at $1 million, statewide asset preservation for DNR owned facilities at $2 million, and forest lands and bridges at $1 million.
Do you have a few questions to this section? Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Hansen, I have a couple of questions. Just what you were running through, state park land acquisition. How much is there for that?
$10 million.
For buying state park land?
Yes.
Okay, and
Madam Chair?
Representative Erdahl.
Also, $46 million for drinking water and wastewater treatment programs. I believe the list that we looked at was 251 requests totaling about $1.7 billion for various projects of that type. Now, I understand, and you were going over some figures, but this $46 million would leverage some federal dollars. And do you have a total number of amounts that $46 million leverages?
Commissioner.
I understand Terry Coleman with the PSA is here. He perhaps has a 20 representative.
We don't have a huge amount of time, but briefly.
Real quick, federal match. We should be able to get $30 million in drinking water and roughly $25 million in wastewater with those funds and federal dollars, and we'll be leveraging those with revenue bonds, hopefully to the neighborhood of about $150 a year for a total of about $300 million in wastewater, with that 24 and roughly about $100 million in drinking water over the next 2 years.
I think he has more questions. Representative Erdahl, before you leave.
No, I actually don't.
Oh, okay.
The figures that I needed, just want to be there. Leave with a comment that I do think this is a critical need and we need to put as much into it as we can.
Several unions.
Thank you. When I looked, the $15 million for closed landfills, it appears from your comments that you have agreed that state taxpayers should clean up the PFOAs and PFOS that were put into the Washington County landfill by 3M. Am I getting that correct? Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Medina. That's the information I was given that 3M is exactly as I said. I guess I don't understand the nature of your question.
All right. If I could do that again. You have $15 million to further clean up closed landfills.
Yes.
You mentioned one landfill, and that was Washington County.
Washington.
And you said that 3M was going to pay $8 million toward it. It then leaves $7 million that additional that you need, and you are asking that taxpayers pay for $7 million to clean up a landfill polluted with PFOAs and PFOSs that clearly didn't come from the taxpayers, but came from 3M. And I just wanted to see if that was correct. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Mike Olof. I'm a team leader at the Department of Finance. Actually, the total project cost there is $23 million. And so it's $15 million in state bond money and $8 million from 3M at this point. But if I understand correctly, if the project costs grow, 3M is responsible for the majority of the cost.
The state share is $15 million,
right, that's
and not $7 million.
Well, I'm glad I asked the question then. So you're asking taxpayers then to pay $15 million to clean up a landfill polluted with PFOAs and PFOSs that taxpayers clearly didn't put in that landfill and that 3M clearly did put in the landfill. Mr. Lawson?
That is my understanding of the negotiation between TCA and 3M on that. So that was their request relative to that landfill site.
And you'll be having a discussion on that in your committee, I'm assuming?
I assume we will.
I think that's a pretty hefty price for taxpayers to subsidize this cleanup. Further questions? Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that question, Representative Genius. I look forward to hearing the response. So I think all of us here, and I know I've had a question from my constituents, that if we know who did the pollution, they are supposed to clean it up. It's that deep pockets thing that we've always followed through with, and so I'm not tracking either why there's only a partial cleanup requested from this certain company in Minnesota. But that's not my question. Madam Chair and Representative, I always call you Representative Hansen.
Never had the honor.
I know you couldn't have the pay cut. I'm looking at this part. I'm on the Water and Soil Resources page, but I'm sure there's other examples of it throughout the budget. And it's a general question. You identify about $3 million of general fund money to go with the $27 million of general obligation, and there's, I'm sure, reasons why the general fund is there, because it doesn't qualify for geo bonds and whatnot. Question is, when's your budget going to be out, and will you be identifying the sources of those general fund dollars? How soon will the committee see that? That's obviously got to come out of your general fund budget. So when are we going to see those? And sure, throughout these two books we have, when will you identify the sources of those general fund dollars and get them off to our finance divisions and committees?
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, as quickly as possible after the February 28th forecast. If I could, Madam Chair, back to Representative Wagenius's question about Washington County. I'm not familiar with the closed landfill program. I'm not sure if the by the fact that we're cleaning it up doesn't preclude us from recovery after the fact. I'm not as familiar with the closed landfill program. And I guess it's something, Madam Chair, that we'll have to clarify. I just wanted to, and you were probably put it into law.
Representative Wagenius, we are precluded then from recovering. That's why I, and what I didn't understand was that it was all for the Washington landfill. I thought perhaps some of this money was for other landfill cleanup, and it apparently is not. So the question is, when we know exactly who put the pollution in the landfill, which we most of the time don't know. Most of the time we don't know the answer to that, but this time it's crystal clear.
Next on the list is Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We just learned that we're going to be voting on Thursday on a constitutional amendment that would dedicate 3/8 of 1% of sales tax to things that, some of which I would understand are included on this list. If that passes, and if the voters approve it, can you hazard a guess as to how many of these things would be eligible to be funded through that dedication of sales tax versus the bonding program?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, I'm not sure, you know, as far as the categories in the specific projects, the problem you would, you know, I'm assuming if it does pass and it gets on the ballot and then it passes in November, then
I'm not sure, but I wonder if you still have to pass something statutory or whether you included it. Mm-hmm. And you have whatever the pro. I mean, you're looking at about a year and a half out before, before the money would be made available. The projects that are on here, presuming they pass, are available for bond sales this summer. As far as the categories, I'm sure some of them are would be eligible for that renewed funding. We can check with DNR and try to get you a list, but I'm just guessing that some of them probably would.
Representative Lanning?
Yeah, oh. Madam Chair, I realize that there may be a timing problem here on when the money would be available, but like the question that was asked about transportation, I think we should also have some sense as to whether we would, by passing that amendment, take some of the pressure off the bonding requests that we see before us here now, whether it's in the short term or the long term. And I'd like to have some kind of sense of that issue as well.
Mr. Hanson. Next on the list is Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, your item on the list here dealing with Vermilion, and when you reference the trust fund, that's in and of itself controversial, but I don't want to have that discussion necessarily now. What I'm interested in is what your process is going to be, whatever the source of that service happens to be. You've got to make a decision, as I understand it, or DNR has an agreement that they will hold this property for potential purpose until something like June 1st. So we've got the LPCMR bill that's going through. We'll have this bill going through, and how do you plan on handling ultimately an authorization for some amount for Vermilion if that remains the goal of the government?
Mr. Hanson.
Process question, not asking for dollar amount or for source.
Representative Carlson, we plan on, would be my hope that negotiations will conclude quickly. I had thought it would be close at hand, and we would have a proposal to you, and we're planning on using the Environmental Trust Fund as a funding source.
I'm aware of your proposal for the funding source, but I'm interested now in just how you're going to put the question before the legislature. So you're going to have a proposal you assume sometime soon. So you'll have a change in the governor's proposal relative to what's before it here with what I'll call the governor's bill then. That's your plan?
Mr. Showalter?
Madam Chair, Representative, there's probably going to be a couple of adjustments to the bonding limit, for instance, with the February forecast. If revenues go up, the 3% limit would go up. If forecast goes down, there'd be a decrease. There's a number of sort of technical things that might, as time goes on, need to be adjusted with the bill. Hopefully, I don't know, by the end of the month, we would have some idea what to do with Vermilion. The assumption was that process-wise, we would make all those changes at once so that we could give you a complete and package. Of course, this all depends on those negotiations being done at that point in time.
Yeah, I understand that, Madam Chair, but you must have a process in mind once those negotiations are complete as to how you'll get it before us. The question that I have that deals headed in part with the 3% that you referenced at the beginning here. Is there some flex there for Lake Vermilion if that were to come forward? And if you're going to have a bonding request, you've got a source. It's a debatable source for the debt service, but there's also the 3% cap.
Madam Chair, Representative, the 3% is a limitation on the general fund supported bonds, basically based on non-dedicated revenues to the general fund. To the extent that Lake Vermilion was supported by another funding source, that wouldn't be subject to the 3% limit. So, for instance, in the beginning of the presentation, we talked about $1.88 billion in total bonding requests. included in this bill. That 965 is a portion of that $1.088 billion, but there's other funding sources included in this package. If Lake Vermilion were to be included at X million dollars, it would be $1.088 billion plus tax.
The next question is from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a follow-up on Representative Junkie's question and Representative Wagenius's. Back to the Board of Water and Sewer Resources, when you mentioned about the discuss the general fund for the technical assistance for the RIM Reinvest Minnesota. Reinvest Minnesota has been around for a while, and there have been requests over the past few years. Has technical assistance been paid for out of GO, or has it, have you always asked for general fund to pay that?
Mr. Showalter.
Madam Chair, Representative. It is, in some years, it has been paid out of bond funds. Certainly, as a policy, we would prefer not to pay for staff out of a 20-year loan, essentially. And so in the governor's recommendations, we're suggesting that those costs be paid for in cash rather than adding to the bonding total.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, thank you. But as Representative Junkie had mentioned, if the, where does the general fund come from if you are in a shortfall? So directly, in the past, we have paid the technical assistance out of the bond.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we have. And that would just add to them the bonding request.
And then one more follow-up, Madam Chair. Representative Wagenius had asked about the 3M landfill cleanup, and the committee had visited Albert Lee Park, where it appears that there have been just years of dumping where we cannot identify a source. So am I correct that the $15 million for closed landfill or any other funding does not address the Edgewater Park landfill cleanup in Albert Lee?
Representative Hansen, that is correct. Follow-up. Representative
Holbert. I think Representative Hansen asked my question, but so the $15 million that the landfill cleanup, I mean, I was wrong when we established that as a funding, because we couldn't identify a particular source of funding. So we're diverting from the long-term commitment we've had to everybody in the state of Minnesota and putting all the resources in one, is that correct?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, those were the priorities put forward by the PCA, and I think that was at the top of the list.
All of the resources, all the $15 million is going to one, is that correct?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, that's our recommendation is $15 million, which covers the Washington closed landfill. I think we can, if there's not somebody from PTA here, maybe at the next meeting, we can have them then answer more details about this specific item.
Well, it's my understanding from the testimony, Madam Chair, that the one landfill will take the $15 million or more. So it may have put up on the top of the priority, but it was kind of supposed to be a statewide program of those that are not identified.
Can
on those original negotiations.
Can staff or someone research that? Is it statute or was it a policy?
No, there's a statute that was passed that deals with that. I think it goes back to, I want to say 1990, if I recall right, somewhere in that area, 92, 94,
that might
maybe.
Be helpful for the committee to see that.
But I just want to clarify it. I don't want to spend a lot more time on it.
Next on the list is Representative Eugenia.
Thank you. Representative Carlson asked you a question about Vermilion, and part of your answer was that if money came from the trust fund, it would not be counted within the 3%, and you said that like it was fact. And I think there's very huge disagreement, and I just want folks to understand that some people will argue that, but it seems to me more people say just the opposite. It will be counted in the 3% because there's no way we can, the legislature will have to appropriate that every 2 years, in order for that to happen. So it troubles me that you're stating that as fact when there's great controversy.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I know there is controversy over whether to use the Environmental Trust Fund for that specific purpose. I was just describing the, you know, the 3% debt service and the what we, it is not a general obligation project, and that's what we count for our 3% debt service. I know that there is controversy whether the Environmental Trust Fund can be used for that benefit.
Did you want to follow?
I know that we're talking about two controversies here. There's the controversy whether to use the trust fund or not. It's one controversy, and we're not addressing that here. The other controversy is, does the use of that count within the 3% or not? That is equally, if not more, controversial.
Madam Chair, to that point,
Representative Silver,
I think the Commissioner is right in that it would not be counted as the 3%. It would become a statutory obligation of the trust fund at that particular time. Now, other legislatures could change that, and then it would become part of, at that particular time, the unobligated part of the 3% if they chose to take it out of the general fund. But if once the law is passed, it's coming from those particular funds, it becomes part of that base in the forecast. So it would take legislative action to undo it as well, which could be done.
Right.
Yeah.
Are there any further questions for the environment and the outdoors? Next, would we continue to economic development then? We don't have a lot of time, so we'll continue for a short while, and then if we come up to 3:45, we'll just continue until Thursday.
It's 3:45.
We have right now 3:40.
Okay.
Mr. Hanson.
Thank you. You notice on the chart that part of the governor's announced SEED initiative. SEED is Strategic Entrepreneurial Economic Development, and I did have to practice that a few times to say it right. It's a first component is a $20 million for the redevelopment grant program. Mm. This is a program that provides assistance in redeveloping commercial, industrial, and residential sites. And it's 50% Greater Minnesota and 50% the 7-county metro. The $20 million for Greater Minnesota Business Development Infrastructure Program is to buy assistance in building new infrastructure. And then the $10 million Bioscience Business Development Infrastructure provides assistance for traditional infrastructure, but also includes activities such as telecommunications labs and incubator facilities.
And we have a question from Representative Junkie.
A couple questions. First, what kind of infrastructure are you talking about? You're pretty general there. What infrastructure are you putting money for?
Is it roads? Is it sewer and water?
For the redevelopment grant program, Madam Chair, Representative Junkie. Okay, for the infrastructure, the information I have says it provides matching grants to cities for traditional infrastructure like roads, sewers, water lines, but also allows telecommunications, bridges, parking ramps, business incubator facilities, and laboratories that support basic science and clinical research.
And Madam Chair, the way I view this, in all sincerity, is $50 million is about the amount of money we needed for LGA last year that didn't get funded. LGA goes to fund roads and infrastructure and other things in our communities. To me, this looks like a way to borrow LGA money and get it out in our rural communities, so and metro communities that get LGA. So I guess I think it's kind of a backdoor way to do LGA, and I'm not overly excited about this piece of the budget. If you just give out the cash, $50 million, like we promised our cities with LGA, they could use that money. That $50 million for roads and for infrastructure needs. That's what it's there for. So, and I'm not sure why we borrow to do the same thing that LGA technically does.
Is there any comments for that? Or If not, okay.
I didn't want questions. No, that's fine.
Okay, members, we're. I would anticipate that there's going to be more questions on the next item as well. So we're coming up to 3:45, and we have other meetings coming up. So we will, at this point, adjourn and take up the economic development for Minnesota Steel on Thursday at our next meeting. The other thing is that the next meeting is Thursday, February 14th, but it's in a different room. It's going to be in the basement hearing room, our regular room. And then we will, on that agenda, we will finish this agenda, and then we will continue the presentation from the West Central Initiative on a Rural Water Wastewater Infrastructure Study and Update on Infrastructure Pilot Project. With that, we stand adjourned.